Hello, everybody, and welcome to a rainy, cold Thursday morning here in New York. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'll be with you for the next hour, and I'm thrilled to be here. And I want to wish you all a happy, happy holiday season. I hope you all had a wonderful Merry Christmas holiday, however it is that you celebrate that day off. One thing that's nice is no matter what your religion is, everyone seems to have that holiday off, or just about everybody. So we get to be with our family and friends and enjoy the day in a relaxed way. And that's just a wonderful thing to do, to end one year before starting the next. So anyway, I hope you all had a wonderful day. I know I got to be with family, and it was wonderful. We actually celebrated with my whole family on the weekend, and so when Christmas actually came on Tuesday, we had a very quiet morning here. No kids were around, and we were able to cook and bring some food to a couple different gatherings later in the day, and it was really a nice day. So I want to just talk to you about what's going on in the area, what things you can do as the year ends, and what things we can set our intentions on as we go into the new year. For those of you that don't know, I send out a weekly newsletter that has a list of ways that you can get involved in your local area or on some national issues, ways that you can take action and find out some of the important issues that are going on. I know many of you already know so many of these issues. But one of them is taking action to protect our organic foods. On a regular basis, the National Organic Standard Board and the National Organic Program are working to loosen the organic standards and make it easier and easier for synthetics and illegal ingredients to be put into our organic foods in small amounts, but trying to sneak them in and get away with it. So right now we need help signing a petition. The National Organic Program, which is abbreviated the NOP, is proposing to delay compliance that the National Organic Standard Board is trying to do. And they're trying to make it illegal to have synthetic vitamins, minerals, and nutrients in organic food. Now, that's already supposed to have been. I had shared with many of my listeners previously that the National Organic Standards Board has a lot of friends in bioengineering companies like Monsanto. And so it's even hard to trust the National Organic Standards Board. So you really want to look at the Organic Consumer Association. They are the organic standards boards that you want to listen to. The national one really has a lot of people who are friends with the other side. So anyway, there's a petition that you can sign on my website under the Organic Integrity is at Stake. So find that petition and please sign it. There's also petitions on my website to sign for gun regulations, although, again, I'm sure many of you have gotten those petitions coming across your own inboxes. Another thing to be aware of is the widespread seafood fraud that's going on. Oceana did an investigative research report and came up listing tilapias being used to replace so many fishes. One is red snapper. Red snapper is one of the fish that you should actually be boycotting right now because it's endangered. So I've been boycotting red snapper for a couple years already, and I'm missing it. So one thing I can say, though, is I have seen over the years when we've boycotted swordfish, and then swordfish has come back. You know, you can really take action and see some results. So you can get those lists through the Monterey Bay or Oceana. They have lists of what seafoods for what areas you should be avoiding. But anyway, the issue now is that so many fish are being sold as other fish, and you can't really trust it. So you really want to ask where the fish comes from, the labeling, and, you know, try to know the best you can where you're purchasing your fish if you were purchasing fish. The Keystone Pipeline, which I've talked to many of you about in prior conversations, is still looking like it's going forward, and we really want to still try to stop it. You know, the TransCanada is claiming that they are using, you know, that they are going to exceed regular safety standards, but in a report that came out recently, it actually showed that they would not be using those extra safety standards when it came to an underground area that goes through a reservoir that is responsible for 30% of the Americans' irrigation water. So the Keystone Pipeline is just bad news. As Bill McKibben says, you know, it would be the end of, you know, life in this country as we know it if they move forward with this. It's just so bad for climate change. So any petitions you see about the Keystone Pipeline that you can get involved in, I really recommend you signing that. What can we look back on this year that really did move forward? And that is GMO and fracking as far as becoming common topics in conversations in American households. I'd say a year ago, many people did not know what GMOs were. And because it was on the ballot in California this year, it has become a common topic and much more mainstream. And so that in itself is good because now more and more people are getting on the bandwagon to label GMOs. And genetically modified organisms are in all of our traditional standard foods in this country. And there's been a lot of wonderful rulings against GMOs this year. And so I just want to share some of those with you. Well, as you know, there was the vote in California, and even though it was defeated 49-51%. So they are recounting that, and so it could end up being overturned because there is a lot of speculation that there was some misguided counting there. So we're still waiting to hear on that. There were over 1 million signatures on the Just Label It petition. Peru passed monumental legislation with a 10-year ban on genetically engineered foods being allowed to come into their country. The non-GMO product organization, the non-GMO project, surpassed $2.4 billion worth of sales this year. Monsanto finally was defeated by some Mexican farmers in the Yucatan. They wanted to plant some more genetically modified soy down there. And I guess there were European businesses that had suspended purchasing honey from the Yucatan area because they were concerned that it was tainted with GMOs. And so a bunch of 59 beekeepers got together and pushed to keep GMOs out of the Yucatan. The movie Genetic Roulette came out, which helped to educate people on GMOs. Brazil ordered Nestle to label any of their products that have more than 1% of GMOs in their products, so Nestle now has to label GMOs in Brazil. What else? France restored a ban on GMO corn crop. And so it was just a good year for, you know, getting the word out and for people moving forward in trying to prevent genetically modified organisms from continuing to grow and take over our whole food system. So we need to really keep our organic standards strong, and you need to do that with work with the Organic Consumer Association, not to be mixed up with the Organic Standards Board, because, like I said, the Organic Standards Board has lots of friends in high places within Monsanto, so they can't totally be trusted. Okay, so I want to let you know that my guest today is Peter Burke, and he's the author of a book called Indoor Gardening, and I'm going to be inviting him on in just a minute. But first, of course, I want to share with you my recipe. And as we get into the winter months, I'm going to be sharing more and more of my soup recipes with you. Winter is just a great time for soup, and there's some soups that you can whip up really quickly. This soup I'm going to share with you just because people have been asking me for this recipe, and I just never had it written down. So I finally made it and wrote it down. Many of you who are my listeners, I know, will not be able to eat it because it is a seafood chowder. But believe it or not, it's very similar to a lot of my other chowders, and you can just add more vegetables and leave the seafood out, and it still will be delicious. It's a really quick, basic way of making a red-based soup. So you're going to start with 2 tablespoons of olive oil. Well, first I'll tell you the ingredients. You need 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 cups of organic onions chopped, 1 cup of organic carrots chopped, 2 organic potatoes cut into bite-sized cubes, and those are pretty large potatoes. So if you're using smaller potatoes, do 4. 3 stalks of organic celery chopped, 1 organic pepper chopped, any color, 2 cups of organic broccoli, and I use mostly the flowerettes, 1 cup of organic frozen corn. You can use fresh, of course, if it's the season. 2 tablespoons chopped garlic. 1 32-ounce jar of organic tomato sauce. Whatever tomato sauce you can use for this. 5 cups of boiling water. 3 tablespoons parsley. 1 tablespoon cilantro chopped. 1 tablespoon dill chopped. 2 teaspoons of salt. Fresh pepper to taste. 1/2 teaspoon of red pepper flakes. You can leave those out if you don't like things spicy. 1 can of chopped clams, and I buy the ones that are sustainably raised or caught. 1 pound of mixed seafood, and I get from Trader Joe's a frozen seafood blend that also is free of any type of preservatives or additives of any kind. But, of course, you can use fresh seafood. But the reason I'm sharing this with you is because this is something that I can always have in my cupboard and in my freezer and be able to just whip out. So I have canned clams in the pantry. I keep a package of this frozen seafood in the freezer. And so if people come over and I want to just whip up a quick pot of soup, this is really quick, and everybody, if they eat seafood, loves it. So in a large pot, you cover the bottom with some olive oil. I saute the onions first over some medium heat until they're translucent. Then I add the carrots and the potatoes and cook for about another 5 minutes. Then I add the garlic, the celery, and the peppers, and I continue to cook for another 5 minutes or so. Then I add a touch of boiling water if the vegetables start sticking, and that usually happens. The potatoes start sticking or the garlic starts sticking. So just a little bit of water in the bottom there will help free that up. You can use more oil if you want, but I'm trying to keep the oil down. So just add a little water. Then I add the tomato sauce, the boiling water, the herbs, the salt, the pepper, and the red pepper flakes. And I mix that up. Then I add the corn, the frozen corn, and I simmer it for about 10 minutes. And I allow the spices to come together. I taste it at that point before I add the seafood just to see if it needs more salt, more pepper, if I want a little more red pepper flake. You can always add lots more parsley. I don't know if many of you caught the article on the medicinal properties of parsley, but parsley is so good for you. So, you know, as much parsley as you like, throw it in. Same with dill and same with cilantro. I mean, herbs, we underplay the value of herbs in our cooking, and they are really so filled with antioxidants and so good for us. So throw in more spices if you'd like more. Then I add the seafood, the clams, and the broccoli just towards the end because you don't want the clams and the seafood to overcook or they'll get tough. And you just cook them until they're cooked, about another 5 or 10 minutes. And the broccoli you want to stay, you know, bright green. And then you serve it immediately. You can garnish it with some more parsley or cilantro or dill, whichever you would like to highlight. And that's it. It's really quick, really delicious, and, you know, it's a hearty meal in by itself. So enjoy. And now it's my pleasure to introduce my guest today, Peter Burke. He's the author of a new book called Indoor Gardening, Seed to Salad in 7 Days. And
hi, everybody.
Hi, Peter. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
Good. I was about to share your bio, which I didn't quite do, so I'll let you tell everybody. a little bit about yourself before we get started.
Sure. Well, I've been an avid gardener since, well, for all of my life, since about 17 years old. And the whole thing with the indoor gardening started about 2005 when I decided to try to grow fresh greens indoors during the winter. You know, I'm up in Vermont, and the winter's a long haul.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you... from that time, after I worked out some of the details of the indoor gardening, I started teaching classes, both to teach and to learn. And as I was doing that, I kept hearing people say, like, "Wow, why haven't I heard about this before?" You know, and it's very simple techniques, but you literally can grow all of the salad greens you need for the, and, you know, not just the entire winter, but all year round if you need.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been just an absolutely great, great discovery for me because, you know, we like our salads and, you know how it is. You can store your carrots and your beets and all those other things in a cold storage. You put something in the freezer. We dry or dehydrate some of our produce, but the one thing you just can't get in the winter is fresh greens.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's really what got me started on it, and you know, being a gardener to start with was a big help because. In some ways, but a lot of what you do in this is almost counterintuitive to gardening. So, you know, it's very simple.
Uh-huh.
Very simple.
Now, I know many of us, you know, like I grew up when I was, you know, in college, I used to grow sprouts, you know, just on the windowsill, you know, in a little bit of... wet paper towel, but you do it. Mm-hmm. You do it differently. You actually grow in, you call it soilless soil. What do you
mm-hmm.
mean by
that,
and why do you choose that way over, you know, the way that I used to
well,
know to do it?
Sort of to go back to some of the problems with sprouting per se, because when I first started this, I started to sprout in jars, and in, you know, those plastic sprouters and those types of things. But I wasn't really happy with them. So I started to do something I had done years ago at the Hippocrates Health Institute, was to grow in just a small amount of soilless mix. It's called the germination mix. If you're, you know, looking at the store, it's just peat moss, vermiculite, and perlite. And it has... you know, we're going to add fertilizer to it, so you don't need anything that has a fertilizer. And what I found was that there were it made the whole process so much easier. Although it seems like an extra step to go ahead and to work with the soil, in fact, it made it a lot easier to do. And some of the things that I like about it is, one, if you get, you know, a nice big green crop. You probably can see on the cover of the book there that these are not just sprouts. These are actually greens.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they're lush and beautiful and crispy. And when you mix them all together in a salad, you really feel like you've got a beautiful tossed salad. It's not just you know,
not
the
just sprouts
growing like they are in alfalfa. Yeah.
Right. Right.
So I have a section in the book called The 10 Reasons Why I Like Growing in Soil Versus Any Other Method, right? You can
mm-hmm.
count down there, you know, things like, I like the idea that the hulls drop off all on their own, you know, that you're not spending hours trying to wash off all the little seed hulls. And I've done an awful lot of that, so I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I found they were a lot easier to care for in that, you know, the first 4 days, the instructions are do nothing. You're going to put them in a dark cupboard, and you're not going to do anything with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first 4 days. And then after that, all
you're
going to do
is that?
Go up.
Why do you want them in a dark space?
Well, I, basically what I'm doing is I'm forcing them. I'm getting them to grow up and reach. If you put them in the sun too early, they're going to, the leaf, you know, the cotyledon, the first leaf, the seed leaf is going to set. And if you leave them in the dark, they're actually going to stretch out. So they're actually almost 1 inch high by the time you put them into the light.
So they're stretching for the light. Is that it?
They're stretching for the light. You're sort of, this is part of the counterintuitive, you know, part of it. Whereas, you know, for your garden, as soon as you see anything come up out of the soil, you know, you want to put them in the light. Well, in this case, we actually want them to force a little bit. Mm-hmm. We want them to grow up. So that's, you know, that's why I'd say the first 4 days you do nothing. And then after that, you're just watering once a day. You're not, you know, with the sprouts, I had to rinse them 3, sometimes even 4 days in the warmer weather. And this makes it a lot easier to work into your, for me, my workaday life. You know, I don't have the time to, you know, fuss over, you know, rinsing sprouts 2 or 3 or 4 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I leave for the office at 6 in the morning, and I'm back at 6, 6.30. So, I, you know, that's just that's all the time that I have to do it in. So the other thing that I really like, one of the other things is when you grow these sprouts and you have them on the windowsill or on a shelf in front of the window, they actually are just, they're beautiful. They're beautiful greens, and, you know, in the dead of winter, they're really a welcome sight.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah. The picture on the cover of the book is beautiful. It's beautiful.
You know, come
and the
January,
ones on the top,
December,
red stem, are those beet sprouts?
The red ones, those are actually, the red ones at the top are actually called a Hong Vit. It's a radish.
Ah.
And it has that beautiful red, and actually the picture is, and doesn't really do it justice. Even it's even more crimson and beautiful.
Really?
And then the other ones that are pinkish, those are buckwheat, and they tend to get a little pinkish, and they'll even get a deep pink if it's real sunny out, and they seem to respond to the sunlight.
Mm-hmm. One thing when looking at your book that I found really fascinating was that you actually get more of the antioxidants fighting you know, nutrients out of the sprouts than you do out of actually eating the vegetable. I think that, what did you say, that the broccoli
sprouts.
Isn't
that a great picture?
Broccoli
you've got
sprouts.
4 pounds of broccoli sitting there in that picture.
Right, one ounce of eating broccoli sprouted greens is equivalent to eating 4 pounds of broccoli.
Yeah. And when I first started, I really just started with the peas, the sunflower, the buckwheat, and the radishes. And it was after you're reading over and over about, you know, oh, I guess it was when the book Superfoods came out, and there were tons of articles that would say, oh, you know, broccoli is good for you because it has this. And there was always sort of either a you know, a little sidebar or a parentheses, and broccoli sprouts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the book, it actually it says a sidebar of broccoli sprouts, the super food. So I had to try them to see if the same techniques that I was using for the large seeds worked for these seeds. You know, you've seen broccoli seeds. They're just tiny.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to see if they would work the same was such a little challenge at first, because they were so small. I sort of thought, well, geez, I'm going to need a lot more of them. Turns out you need about a third. You need a teaspoon of those for a tray versus a tablespoon of the big seeds for a tray.
So when you're doing those trays, you're doing them like in the 3 by 6 inch trays.
Yes, three by six inch.
1 tablespoon per tray?
1 tablespoon of the big seeds, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just a teaspoon of the smaller seeds.
Well, let me share one mistake. My first time trying, I told you I was going to try. I made a mistake. I used my bread pan, right?
Yeah.
Which is about the same size that you're talking, 3 by 6. Maybe it's a little bit longer. But mine are aluminum, and they rusted.
Well,
you know, aluminum. So even though I, you know, in your pictures you showed doing it in aluminum disposable aluminum pans.
Right, yeah.
So
well,
I thought my aluminum thing would be okay, and it rusted. And
yeah,
so,
it's not actually aluminum. That's actually it's a kind of steel, and the aluminum doesn't actually rust. But, you know, certainly the rust is not a problem, you know, except for cleaning it up afterwards. But
do you think it gives extra iron into the sprouts?
Yeah. Not a problem at all. It's just like, you know, we grow some of our indoor plants in pots that are cast iron,
mm-hmm.
and they rust on the inside. It's not really a problem.
It's not.
As you can see, I use the little disposable aluminum foil bread trays, the half pound, which is 3 inch by 6 inch, and the full bread loaf, which is 4 inch by 8 inch. I use those for my classes and for, you know, demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I'm using them at home, I like to use the ceramic ones. They're
right.
easier to clean up, and, you know, they're reusable and all the rest. I don't even have to worry about recycling, even though the aluminum is pretty easy to recycle.
Yeah. So you're doing it in these bowls, it looks like, just like,
yeah, ceramic bowls, yeah. You can just go to the dollar store or to a yard sale, and you pick them up for pretty cheap, and they last mm-hmm. a good long time.
So
and
in, there those is a bowls chart- that, in those bowls that you have pictures of, that's one tablespoon for most of them of the seeds
yeah.
in
it's
one of those bowls?
For most of them, and then you'll actually see on page 33 there's a conversion chart that tells you what size bowl, you know, and how much to plant in it, you know, like a 4-inch bowl or a 5-inch bowl, you know, round bowl, and it'll tell you how many square inches it and how that converts.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you an idea, and you can eyeball it too.
Right.
One of the mottos that I've come up with after years of doing the classes is that you cannot mess this up.
That's
you
good.
Know, there's 100 things that you can do wrong, and you'll still do fine with your
sprouts. That's great. Well, on that note, let's just take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, you'll tell us more about really how to start from the beginning.
Yep.
And
the
so
mechanics.
Many of us can really take it on and do it, okay?
Sure, yeah.
Don't go away, everyone. We'll be right back. You've been listening
I'll
to
be
Bonnie
right
at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Peter Burke. He's the author of a new book called Indoor Gardening, Seed to Salad in 7 Days. And we're just talking about how easy it is to grow your own sprouts inside all year long. Peter,
yep.
Are you back?
I am here.
Welcome.
Thank you.
One of the fascinating things that I found about the book is that you really can keep it going all winter long. How mm-hmm. often do you find that you grow the sprouts? Do you start them actually every day, or do you?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. Well, it's the easiest way to incorporate it into your kitchen. Then, matter of fact, that was one of the tipping points for me. I started out doing it in large trays. And a large tray really creates a lot of problems. And by doing just a little bit every day or every other day, you can fit your trays into your cupboard right in the kitchen. You can have everything you need. You bring it out. You do your 5 trays like I do, or maybe 2 large trays like Dr. Claudia does. She just does 2 large trays every day. And, you just work it into your life. And with a large tray, you have to worry about lights. With the smaller trays, you can just do as right in front of the windowsill, or I made a shelf like you saw on the cover of the book. But it's simple. This is not going to take over your life. It's not like a large indoor garden. And that's the key to it, is to try to make it so that it works for you. It's not an that you enjoy it. And I mean, I enjoy gardening. I do gardening outdoors. I taught square foot gardening for about 4 years, and I use that. And one of the things that I notice about gardening is you go out, you nurture the garden, and then you walk away feeling nurtured yourself. And that's the nice thing about this, is that it's something that it's a pleasure to do.
So, and you say you don't need any special lights. You can just do the sunlight.
Absolutely so, not.
Do you have to have southern exposure?
That's no. Any northern window, any window at all will work just fine. And if you can see, it's enough light. Matter of fact, the right on page one of the book, you know, the picture there is a picture of the one on the left is a picture of a northern window right there, and you can see that there's absolutely no lack of greens there. That, you know, the top shelf is the ones that have just come out of the cupboard, and that they're all yellow. And then as you go down, you see that they're, you know, they're growing just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very small window with very little light. So
now,
you
in that picture, you have 12 bulbs. What are the different sprouts there? Are they're all different?
There's the buckwheat. Let's see, you're starting, say, on the left at the top row, that's sunflower. Then you've got some radishes, the next one over, and the next one is buckwheat. And then I think there's a second radish. Yeah, that's a second radish. And then the next one down is interesting, because the first two are that Hongvit radish.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one is actually purple kohlrabi, and that has such a beautiful, delicate, it's in the same kohl or cabbage family, the broccoli family, so it is also high in that sulforaphane, the antioxidant that's so important. But I like it just because it's a different color in the salad bowl, and if you put the reds and that purple together, and it just looks really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So the point of what you were trying to get is how to do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we wanted to. So it's on page 43 and page 44. It's what I did is I wrote this book the way I'd like it laid out, and so right on those two pages is everything you need. The first page is the, you know, get ready guide, and the second page is the quick start guide. So, you know, the first page says, okay, this is what you need. You need the trays, you need the soil, you need some compost, you need sea kelp, you need some of the some seeds, the larger seeds with the peas and the daikon, the sunflower and the buckwheat, and the smaller ones are your cabbages or your broccoli. And I also use a canola quite a bit, which is a real nice sweet green and much less.
Wait a minute, stop for a second. There's actually a seed called canola. I thought canola was the name for Canadian oil, you know, rapeseed oil. And
canola comes from canola seeds.
Really?
Yeah, no kidding. And it's in the broccoli family, and it's much cheaper because it's grown in large quantities, much cheaper than your broccoli. And it's just a very nice tasting and very hearty growing.
Wow.
So
now,
where
do you get your seeds?
I get my seeds from several sources. You know, of course, I'm buying in 50 and 100 pound, but I have all of the seeds on my website, thedailygardener.com. And that's one of the reasons I set up that website, was so that there was a source of tested seeds. Well, it's everything that I offer on the website has been something that I actually grow myself.
And are all the seeds that you supply organic?
Oh, absolutely. I would never consider anything else.
Mm-hmm.
They have a, you know, for seeds you have to have, you know, a germination rate that's above 90%. Of course, they need to be organic. And you also have to be careful that they haven't been fumigated in storage. So, you know, those are things that you just, you find growers who are doing those things, who are committed to the organic and, you know, non-GMO, as you were talking about in your, in the beginning of your program. All very, very important to me, both as a gardener, but as a consumer as well.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you get these things all ready to go. When you got those, you're ready to start planting. And then on the next page, it's, you know, you soak your seeds for 6 to 24 hours. You know, you moisten your, I use a 1 gallon bag for the, to measure out the soil mix. And then when you're just about ready to plant, after that 6 hours, you soak those newspapers so that they're good and, you know, good and wet and soggy when you're putting them on top of the seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just start. You put the I put the fertilizer in the bottom of the trays, and that would be a tablespoon of compost and a half teaspoon of either dried sea kelp meal and or the liquid seaweed, either
mm-hmm.
one of them. Work fine. And I found that you can grow them without that fertilizer, but on the seventh day or so, they start to turn a little yellow. And so that was enough evidence for me to say that, you know, they get something out of that little bit of fertilizer that I put at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just put that moistened soil mix in the tray, level it off, put your seeds on, put the newspaper on, and stick it in the cupboard for 4 days.
So you lay the seeds right on top of the soil?
I do. Like mm-hmm. I said, there's a certain amount of counterintuitive here.
right. So you don't have to cover it with like a quarter inch more of the soil.
Well, the things I find that keeps the greens cleaner, they don't grow up with that peat moss and, you know,
on top, right.
Cling into their leaves and stuff. So it's a little bit cleaner, saves you a little bit of cleanup time. And
well, actually, when you cut them off after they're growing, you don't even have to wash them, right? Or do you?
Well, true, you don't actually have to. I always rinse them in clean water. But the things like the peas and the sunflower, it's literally just a rinse.
Mm-hmm.
With the small seeds like the broccoli, you'll see on number 16, the picture there, you know, I actually just push them down in a little tray, and the little tiny black seed hulls are so light they just come right to the top. And so I rinse those off like that.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the amount of water that you use is just a fraction of what you'd use otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, and you can see there's my son watering the, you know, once a day he helps out with it.
Mm-hmm.
I saw you do quite a bit of work with the, with like the Girl Scouts and teaching courses to the young
people. I do. And this is a wonderful thing that I can bring into schools as well. Because,
yeah,
as you said, it's so satisfactory. One, for kids to really be able to see the result, and because it's foolproof. So it's not, you know, when you plant, you know, when you do like one seed at a time and you're planting and everyone's watering it, you know, you mm-hmm. always feel bad for the kid who doesn't have anything come up. You know, it's always going to be one seed that's not going to work, but when you're planting a tablespoonful, you're going to get seeds mm-hmm. that are growing, you know.
And the neat thing is that they can actually peek underneath the newspaper, the wet newspaper, and they'll see a difference every single day.
Mm-hmm.
They'll see the root hairs start to get all fuzzy, you know, and they come out, and then they get the stem come up, and then it pushes that paper right up on the fourth day. So within 4 days, they're seeing dramatic difference.
Right, and so then you harvest on day 7?
Well, anywhere from 7 to 10 days. It just depends on your temperature. If you're growing them in a really cold house, like some people keep their houses 60, 65, it might take an extra day or so, but it doesn't, you know, it'll still grow fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if have a 70-degree house and they've been in a 70-degree cupboard, you know, anywhere from 7 days on.
Mm-hmm.
And after you see the first true leaf, you know, start, then you have to cut them. Otherwise, they change flavor and are not quite so good. But I've never had a problem with that. We actually eat them faster than I can grow them.
And do you add them to, like, a green salad, or do you actually make a salad just with the sprouts?
I do both. I have what I call the all-star, all-sprout salad, and that's one each of the five different greens. It's one tray of the sunflower, the peas, the buckwheat, the radish, and then one of the broccoli. And then I mix those all in a salad, and that's about 14 ounces of greens. Average is right around there. And
for four bowls worth?
The five, actually.
Five, okay.
Four big seeds and the one little one, so that's, and I'll do those, and that makes a nice tossed salad. But there are recipes in the back where, you know, I have a sunflower Caesar salad, I've got even a wilted green salad, and, you know, there's a lot of leeway there. And some of the greens, like the pea shoots, are very easy to cook with. We've, matter of fact, just over Christmas Eve, we go to a party, my wife made a pea shoot and carrot tempura, which is absolutely fantastic.
Tell me about that. What does she do?
Well, we cut the pea shoots. We cut them up into about an inch and a half lengths, and then we julienne the carrots. You know, so they're about an inch and a half, so they're about the same length. And then we put it in the batter and just deep fry them. And they are delish with a regular little dipping sauce of the soy sauce and garlic and ginger.
Sounds good.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's the best.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that was sort of one of the things on my wish list when I first started here was I made up a wish list of all the things I wanted from my indoor greens. And one that I thought was the least likely was to be able to cook with some of these greens, grown stuff that I can't cook with. Well, you know, for instance, the pea shoots are very hardy to cook with. And actually, we've done the same thing, the tempura, with the broccoli sprouts. And they make you just make a little patty with them, but you could mix them with the pea shoots or anything, really. The other thing that I do with the broccoli is I actually just cut them up fine, like a garnish, like you'd use chives on top of a soup, like a miso soup or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, so you're just supercharging them by putting all that broccoli in there. And even a small amount, as you know, has a big kick. And it's a great way to add a little bit of extra nutrition to your soup. Just clip them up.
Mm-hmm. And so you carry all these different varieties of seeds on your website?
Yeah, most of them. I'm actually out of the Hongvit and the purple kohlrabi. It was a real bad season for radishes this year with the droughts out in the Midwest. Matter of fact, they just told me they were probably going to be out of the radish for a little while, but I have enough.
Mm-hmm.
The sunflower. Sunflower's been beautiful. Not quite as big as it had been up till about 2010. You know, they've had a couple of years of drought out there. So it's, it's hard to see.
Can all seeds be sprouted?
No. I have tried a lot of different seeds. I have some additional seeds in the back of the book. You'll see, like, the French lentil makes a really nice shoot. Adzuki beans are really beautiful. But almost all the other beans, like your soybeans, your black turtle beans, pinto beans, all of those make really bitter greens. They're just awful. All the pumpkins, the squashes, zucchini, I've had no luck with them at all.
Really?
So it's just a matter of trying them out. And people like fenugreek, but when you let them green in the sun, they get real bitter too. But some people like that, you know. When you cook it, if you plan to cook it.
Have you tried carrots or celery?
I have tried them, but they're not productive enough. They're pretty slow growing, you know. I like to keep it within that 7 to 10 day window. before a harvest, whereas a carrot will sometimes not even be up, you know, in that period of time. But I keep trying new ones. Almost all of the Asian greens are okay, you know, like your Mizuna and the Tatsoi and all of those. They're a little pricey, so I have that one tray of broccoli, and that's the one that I'll vary quite a bit, and I'll try all the different. Chinese cabbage is wonderful as a sprout. You know, there's a lot of different things you can try like that.
Yeah, because I'm thinking of, you know, I have lots of organic seeds that I didn't get in the soil this year, you know, and you know, either I can save them for next year, but then you don't know if they're going to all work or not, or I can try sprouting them.
Well, you send me a list, and I'll let you know one way or the other. If you just want to rattle them off, I'll let you know which ones will grow well for you.
Yeah, I'll send you a list, because I know I have lots of seed, and, you know, I think, you know, some of the things that I planted this year, the seeds were already a couple years old, and and you don't get as much production out of them.
Almost any pea seed will work fine. The sunflower, I try to stay with the black oil seed. The one with the striped one, they call a confection sunflower. For some reason, that little shell tends to hang really tight on the leaf. You know, so I stay with the black oil seed. And spinach, which I was just, that was like the holy grail of fresh greens, they don't work very well. They come up and they have this really tiny seed leaf, and the seed hull tends to just stay on every single little one, so you'd be picking off a lot of holes.
And what about alfalfa? Do you do the alfalfa this way?
I do. At times I do alfalfa or clover, which is really good too. And all of those seeds that are used for growing, you know, in jars work fairly well. They're not big and productive the way your sunflower or your peas are. But you know, they're good for you. But I focus mostly on the broccoli family, because that's the one that seems to have the most antioxidant.
Right.
But all of them are good, you know.
Now, do you ever save any of your own seeds? Like, have you ever tried peppers?
You know, it's funny you say the pepper. I haven't tried the pepper, but I was looking at all the pepper seeds that came out of one of the peppers I was cutting up for a dish this week, and I thought, I should try these things.
Well, I was thinking the same thing just last night when I was cutting up the pepper. I'm going, what if I could save these seeds and sprouts? Because I have, you know, I have the sprouts going right now in my kitchen that I started last week that are doing well. And
well, yeah, and as you mentioned that, I was thinking, well, you know, I have these volunteer tomato plants in my garden all the time. You know, I should see how those taste when they're up about 3 or 4 inches.
Right. So then what do you do with the root structure underneath the plants? Mm-hmm. After you cut off the sprouts, you're
There's
then left with all the soilless dirt and roots at the bottom. What do you do with that?
There's a couple of different ways you can deal with that. And one is if you have a garden, you probably have a compost pile, and so you're just in for a real treat, because that root little soil cake just decomposes into wonderful, wonderful compost. You're putting that compost in there and the sea kelp, and then that root mass is when you pull up soil up out of that tray of something like peas, it literally is a mass. It's like a quarter inch mass of roots in the bottom there, and that's terrific as a green manure for your garden. So I just stack them up, put them right in with the compost, and they decompose, and you know, we use it in the garden. In the city, or where you don't have that kind of situation, what you can do is a couple of different approaches. One is you can let that soil cake just completely dry out and then crumple up, and the root system just becomes just very, very fine and dry. and then you can reuse that soil that you crumpled up, because the perlite and the peat moss are both very reusable.
Mm-hmm.
And you're gonna add to that the fertilizer, you know, again, the compost and the sea kelp. So that's one way you can do it. And the other is you can put it in a 5-gallon bucket and just keep stuffing those things in that 5-gallon bucket.
And then take it to your local community garden and let them compost it.
Absolutely.
Peter, really fast, before we run out of time, share with everybody your website again so that they know where they can order these sprout seeds if they'd like.
The book is available at The Daily Gardener, and that's just spelled out, TheDailyGardener, all in one word, .com. It's also available on Amazon. You just have to type indoor gardening and my name, Peter Burke, and it'll come right up. And I appreciate if you leave a comment if you get it there. And my email is right on the website. You can contact me, and I welcome questions anytime.
Wonderful. And I'll keep you updated, everybody out there, with my sprouts and how I'm doing with it, because I'm really excited about this. You know, I miss the greens also in the winter. So thank you so much, Peter, for joining us. And everybody out there, have a wonderful, wonderful rest of the week. Enjoy your celebration for New Year's Eve and the new year. And I will see you back here next Thursday, right after the new year. Have a wonderful, wonderful holiday, and be safe.